The Hannah Gray Mayor of Bromley podcast, championing small businesses. Hannah Gray has been serving the community as a local government councillor for several years. She was nominated to be the 2020-2021 Mayor of the London Borough of Bromley at the height of the COVID pandemic in March 2020. Hannah has for many years been known as one of South London's most prolific small and medium enterprise networkers. Before becoming mayor, Hannah was Bromley's business champion, promoting and helping entrepreneurs achieve their business ambitions. She's now dedicated to helping promote SMEs, charities, and voluntary organizations to learn from their experiences for the benefit of all.
This week, I'm joined by Jem of Jem Bahajoub Consulting, a very talented digital marketing expert. Jem and I are members of BNI, which stands for Business Networking International. And I remember the very first day Jem came as a visitor to our meeting. I was so impressed, so impressed. Not only is she stunning, but she also introduced herself so well. Everything I hear and the words of wisdom that I hear from Jem always make me even more determined to do better when it comes to my own marketing. And we've been really fortunate with the mayoralty because Jem has really helped us go forward with our social media and our digital marketing, as well as the other businesses that I work for. So I'm really delighted that she's with me today. And I just thought it's only fair to bring her in so that she can give us some of her words of wisdom and tips for us all today. So welcome, Jem, to my podcast.
Thank you so much, Hannah. And thank you for saying my name so wonderfully. I'm so used to people pronouncing my second name wrong that when they pronounce it correctly, I like gush with gratitude and I'm so grateful. So thank you.
I'm really pleased. Because, you know, it's really important, I think, you know, someone's identity, isn't it? And I don't actually know where your name comes from. Is there an origin to your surname?
Yes, it's Moroccan. Ah. Yeah. And my first name, Jem, is short for Jemala. But as I was growing up, I got so sick of people pronouncing my name wrong. It's because Jemala Bahajoub is quite a mouthful. A friend of mine, when I was about 14 or 15, just started to shorten it to Jem. And I thought, you know what? That's so much easier. I'm just going to grab that. And especially when I started to work for myself and in the business world, I thought, you know what? I think Jem's a little bit easier. But I kept my surname. I didn't change it to my husband's name because I decided that his was too English and boring. Jem Bahajoub. Most people do struggle a little bit, but they get there.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know people that have worked with you and they say, you know, Jem, the digital marketing lady. I mean, quite often they don't even attempt it. So I'm really pleased I got it right. So that's really good. So going back then, talking about your childhood, which you just did, where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? Are you a local girl?
I am a local girl. Yeah, born and brought up in Southeast London, Forest Hill. And moved back to Bromley area 3 years ago after working in America for 10 years. So yeah, my family are here and this is where I, you know, went to school, spent the majority of my childhood. So yeah, it's really lovely to be back. I mean, home is where the heart is.
Oh no, I think it's great. I mean, we're thrilled you're here, I have to say, with all your help that you've given us. But going back again, go on, this is one for you. When you were a child, what was your favourite TV programme? This is always a one to...
Oh my goodness, yeah, that's about a tough one. So when I was a child, and I'm not going to reveal my age,
oh no,
but back in the days, it was all about Sunday morning TV, wasn't it? We didn't have on-demand TV. See, my kids don't quite believe the fact that I couldn't watch TV or my favourite programme when I wanted to, like they do now. There was no YouTube or Netflix. So yeah, it was Sunday morning TV and Wurzel Will Gummidge and then Why Don't You? I don't know if you remember those two, but it was Sunday morning TV was golden.
I remember Wurzel Will Gummidge, but I don't think I know the Why Don't You? I don't think I know that. I'll have to look that up now because that's just going to make us all curious. And so when you were young, did you know what you wanted to do? I mean, we know what you do now and we're going to learn more about it as we go through the interview. But did you know what you wanted to do when you were younger?
Not really. I kind of went through that stage of I wanted to be a vet at one point. I don't know why. A beautician at another point. And then I decided I wanted to work in the media. So my first job out of university was working for a TV production company in Soho. I thought that was what I sort of set my sights on. But that actually evolved into various other different roles. But yes, it was media orientated to begin with.
So you've always been in that kind of area then, if it's media orientated. I mean, did you go on and do further studies? Did you go
yes,
to
I
university?
Yes, I did. I went to Nottingham University. I actually studied sociology, so nothing to do with media. But it was to do with society and the, you know, people, which have always fascinated me. And then, yeah, so when I left, I got an internship at a production company in Soho. I worked there for 6 months. And then the way my career progressed was it was kind of a combination of luck and me sort of grabbing the reins and just saying yes to things that I was a bit unsure of. I got this opportunity probably 6 months to a year after, this was after various really odd jobs, by the way, like I was a tea lady after university. I've done some random things and I can't even make tea. But that's another story. Sort of a year after I graduated from university, a friend's aunt was looking for an assistant to help her work in on a concert in Italy. And I was like, yeah, no, I'll do that. That sounds really fun. I love it. I'd love to go to Italy. And little did I know that it was actually Luciano Pavarotti's manager. So I went and worked in Modena, his home town, on the Pavarotti and Friends concert series, and I actually ended up doing that for 4 executive years, and also working on some of his concerts in London, and then that resulted in me being hired by his record label Decca Music Group to work in their promotions department. So it was very much it's funny looking back to see how it sort of all worked out, but it really was a case of me just going, yeah, okay, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll do that. And just going for it.
That is
it was
brilliant.
Amazing.
That is absolutely brilliant. And you know, that is really great advice. I mean, that does lead me to a question. I'll come to it in a minute, but I don't know if you knew, but I actually did sing on stage once in my lifetime with Pavarotti. Now, that is a little bit of an exaggeration because it was a masterclass that he was giving and I was part of Trinity College of Music and we got the opportunity to go and sing and get some coaching from him. But what an incredible man. And in fact, my brother that lived in Paris took me to Paris Opera House to go and hear him sing in a recital. And his voice actually came up the back stairs. We were in a box and came up the marble and hit us in the back of the head. It was just incredible. What a voice that man had. Really amazing. I'd actually forgotten. You had told me about that and I'd actually forgotten that. So that's taken me by surprise and brought such lovely memories for me too.
Yeah.
But did that lead you to go into America when you were working with that record company? Because I know you did pop over to America and you had a very strong career over there.
Yeah, that didn't lead me to America just then. So I worked for the Decca Music Group, which is part of Universal Music, for about 6 years in their international promotions department. It did lead me to travel a lot. So I toured the world with a lot of bands, organising their promotional schedules, their global promotional schedules. And I was really, really lucky to go to Japan, Taiwan. I did a whole Southeast Asia tour with an artist called Hayley Westenra, who's a New Zealand soprano. I worked with the band Bond and did a lot of touring with them across Europe. And it was just an amazing time of my life because, again, it was I was doing what I love, which was traveling. I absolutely love traveling and embracing new experiences. And was really, obviously, I've always loved arts and entertainment. So it felt like that job sort of married all these different aspects of my interests and lives into one job. And it was an amazing experience. It really pushed me out of my comfort zone.
It's so important, isn't it, to grab opportunities when they come along. I so often say, actually, to my boys, you've got to work hard, you've got to have great work ethic, you've got to do as much as you possibly can to promote yourself, but then when an opportunity comes along, just grab it with both hands and go for it, because there's always a little bit of luck involved, isn't there, in tremendous success, but there's also hard work and dedication that goes with it too. So it sounds as if it's so glamorous, the lifestyle that you led. That is That is absolutely wonderful. So how did you end up going to America then? How did that bit join in?
After I left Universal Music, I headed up a PR agency in Soho for, I think it was about 5 years. And that worked. That was working with a lot of the music festivals in the UK. And ended up going to America as my husband got a job offer over there. And again, I think it was one of those situations, and I seem to have had a lot of situations of these in my life, where it was sort of, the opportunity was there, and as I am with most things, I was obviously very uncertain and scared and unsure and never thought that I would, you know, be away from my family and my friends, but just felt like at that point, you know, my instinct told me that yes, absolutely, this is the right thing for us to do. So I actually left my career in London behind and had to relaunch myself and reestablish myself in the USA. And when I first arrived, we moved to Washington, D.C. first, and this was in 2008. And actually, it was a really historic time to move to America because it was the year that Obama was inaugurated. And we moved to Washington, D.C. And actually, in the first sort of, I think, 4 months of being there, it was a bitter cold winter. But we were on the National Mall watching the inauguration of Obama. So it was fantastic. But when I arrived there, I was uncertain what I wanted to do. Did I want to find work? And the thought of working for myself actually hadn't even occurred to me. Because up until that point, I'd always worked for other companies. And again, I was just really uncertain. So I always think that, I think there's this misconception that you always have to be sure of what you want to do in order to succeed. And often I think it's an opportunity of just embracing the fact that you don't quite know, and that through a process of elimination, you discover what you love and what you're good at. And I kind of feel that that was very much a theme throughout my life, of just discovery. And through that discovery and through that sort of pushing myself out of my comfort zone and embracing new opportunities, I've discovered who I am and what I love and what I'm good at. So I was in Washington, D.C., and I decided to take a course in marketing to get a marketing certification at Georgetown University. And it was through doing that, one of the tasks that we were asked to do was to pretend that we were creating our own company and to market that. And through that process of doing, I thought, why am I pretending? Why am I not doing this?
Absolutely.
And I thought, yeah, no, I can do that. And up to that point, I had been working very much in the arts and entertainment industry. And I made the observation that Washington, D.C., although it's very, you know, it's the nation's capital and it's very known for its politics, but actually very undervalued for the fact that it has a very, very vibrant arts and entertainment scene. It's a very transient scene because D.C. is a very transient city, but it's got a fantastic pool of talent and a lovely community of creative individuals who all 100% embraced me. And it was my first experience of that sort of American can-do attitude, which I absolutely love and has actually really inspired me in my career, and realized that I could offer all the skills and services that I offered in the UK, I could offer this in Washington, D.C. There was a gap in the market because although there was a very vibrant arts and entertainment scene, there wasn't actually the structure around it to service that scene. So they weren't marketeers and publicists there that actually specifically dealt with the needs of musicians, local musicians and local bands and record labels in the area. So I very slowly started to work with a couple of local musicians, then started to work with some record labels and some events, and just built up my portfolio over time. But it was starting from scratch, and it was, again, a process of discovery. And I, you know, there were times where I made mistakes, but it's just, I learned so much through that experience, and did that for 5 years. Within that 5 years, I also gave birth to my first child, who's a little Washington, D.C. baby.
Crikey. So you were super busy.
Yes.
And pregnant at the same time. Gosh, that's a job and a half, isn't it, really? Gosh.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, but how wonderful. So I'm loving the fact that you are very open. You didn't know, you were prepared to try, you were being brave, you were outside your comfort zone. All of these things, I think, people can miss out on nowadays. I think, unfortunately, the younger generation are given the snowflake title, but I don't think they're all snowflakes. I think they are very capable of being brave and being looking forward to trying different things in life. And you just never, ever know, do you, unless you try things, unless you put yourself out there. And as you said, you did think you made a few mistakes, but it's learning from them that's the most important thing, isn't it? Having a go and learning from it. And look what you did. So that was 5 years. But you were there longer than that, though, weren't you?
So you continued
after you'd had your first baby.
That's right. So after being in Washington, D.C. for 5 years, we got the opportunity to move to Chicago. And again, it was another major change. But instinctively, I kind of felt like it was the right thing to do. And Chicago is very, very different from Washington, D.C. It's a Midwest city. It's not as transient or, I say, international as D.C., but I instantly fell in love with the city, the Windy City. And we moved there when I had, my son was 2.5 and I was 25 weeks pregnant with my second child. And I arrived in this city. We did this, I think, 12-hour journey across country. I was pregnant driving, and you know, we had a 2-year-old in the back, and our car was full of all of our stuff, and off we went. And we arrived at this house that we'd rented, and you know, we had a blow up bed and a crib for the first night. And I remember falling asleep because I was so tired in this new house in this city where we didn't know anybody. And waking up in the morning and the blow-up bed was totally flat on the floor, just waking up and looking at the ceiling, thinking, what have we done? Why have we done this? But it turned out to be the most phenomenal 5 years of my life in Chicago. And I continued to meet amazing people and have amazing experiences. One of the main differences for me was that becoming a mother opened my eyes up to other industries. So Chicago has one of the highest percentage of female entrepreneurs in the whole of the country. So I started to just very organically meet other mothers in business at play dates, various sort of, kids and parenting events. And actually my very first client in Chicago was a company called Active Mums Club. So it's a fitness company for mums. And I went with my daughter for like a postnatal recovery class and met the woman there and just started. She'd built up an amazing community of very supportive mothers and sort of joined her community and started to get really into fitness with her. And she approached me and said, look, I see that you work in social media and marketing. Would you be interested in doing a trade with me? That I could give you free fitness classes in exchange for consultations. And I said, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. And we did it. And as a result, she introduced me to this group, which was a Facebook group, but it was also a community group called Chicago Mums in Business. And through that group, I very slowly but surely built up my reputation. They had offline events where once a month all the mums would meet up. And, you know, they were mothers who were, you know, represented businesses from loads of different industries. But they were all so inspiring and they were all rocking it, basically, you know, with their kids on their hip. And they were just amazing. And I remember a very proud day when someone posted in the group, can someone recommend a PR and marketing consultant? And there were like 50 comments on that post and every single one was recommending me. And I screenshot it because it was something about 2 years after I'd moved there. But I just felt like really proud of myself that I had received so many recommendations after, you know, being relatively new to the city.
Very short period of time, really. I mean, that's fantastic. And so did you end up working for the person that was looking for someone doing what you do?
Are you talking about Active Mums Club?
Yeah, so the person, she was looking for a recommendation.
So I did, and it was a company called Get It Together Mums. So I started to work a lot for more parenting and lifestyle brands, and that's when I started to diversify my offering a little bit away from arts and entertainment, or just arts and entertainment, to more lifestyle brands. So it was a parenting company, a parenting coach. And I actually started to work with her, and she was my client for, she's been my longest client actually. And it was only, she was my client for 4 years. And actually when I moved back to the UK, I took her with me. And for the first 2 years of moving back to the UK, she was still my client and I was operating all her entire business from the UK, traveling back to Chicago on a regular basis. But yeah, she was amazing. So yes, I did land that client. So thank you for asking.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So you really have had a whirlwind experience, haven't you? You are so brave. I didn't know about the Chicago bit at all. That is incredible. And so you did come back to England, obviously, because you're here now with me, but you came back to England. Did you have to start all over again? I mean, yet again. So you picked yourself up from here. You started it over in Washington, D.C. Then you started all again in Chicago and brought a client back, but you came back here. Did you take up where you left off here, or did you continue down the road you were going down?
No, I had to reinvent myself again. It had been 10 years, and obviously who I was 10 years previous was very different from who I was arriving back in the UK. I was a mother, I'd worked for myself. I didn't want to do what I was doing 10 years previously. So it was very much re-establishing myself. Obviously, I had my family here and I did have some contacts here, but the contacts I had mainly were in the world of PR, which was what I was working in originally. And my interests and my offering had evolved from PR to social media, which is, you know, very reflective of how the marketing world has evolved anyway. You know, this push and evolution into everything very much being centered around social media. So when I came back to the UK, which I always wanted to do, and I wanted my kids really to be grown up here. But when I returned back, there was a part of me was just like, oh, here we go again.
Mm.
I have to do it all over again. And there was a little bit of me that felt a bit tired and a bit fed up, but I did pick myself up. And what was a real advantage is that I had the hindsight of knowing what I needed to do to establish myself. So it felt like a shorter process, but at the same time, what I had done was I have a business partner in Chicago and I have a team in Chicago that I work with. So when I moved back to the UK, I continued to work for US clients and I still do to this day. So 50% of my client base is still based in America. So what happened was, is I came back and I had, you know, 100% of my clients were US based, and I knew that I had to shift that percentage eventually to 50-50. That was in my head. So, you know, a year later it was like 80-20, and then it was like 70-30. Now 2020, we're here, we're 50-50. So, I didn't come back with nothing. But I did really have to. It's just that reestablishing yourself, your credibility,
yeah,
and your professional identity as well. Because obviously, the industry I work in is a very saturated industry. There are a lot of people doing what I do. So to mark yourself out for the rest, you do have to try very hard.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people say that they do what you do, but you do what you do, if you see what I mean. I mean, that's terrible English, but you actually do it. I've seen you do your work. I've seen you work with people. I've seen the massive change you make with people and their companies, because you work with people, not just on a strategy, not just on their digital marketing. You actually work with the people themselves to get the best out of them, because you're really good with people. And I've seen you do that with the different companies that I know that you've worked with. And I just think they must benefit so much from this huge experience that you've got, having to do it for yourself. You've done it for yourself, and now you're helping large and smaller companies in and around England. So I think that's fabulous work that you've done. I mean, what would you say, having to restart yourself on a couple of occasions, what would you say were the biggest obstacles and challenges that you've had to face? If you were going to try and inspire people to keep going at this time when things are really difficult, what would you say were the ways to get over those obstacles and challenges?
Most of the challenges really are mental challenges. And so I think just having the right mindset is really, really important. Yes, there's a lot of people that do what I do, but there's only one of me. And I think what a lot of, I think that one of my unique selling points is that, you know, I am a small business owner that has reinvented myself and launched myself numerous occasions, which is why I love working with small business owners trying to take their business to the next level. I've been there. I know the struggles that they're feeling and the challenges that they're facing and that sort of sense of overwhelm. So I love just getting to know them and the people. I mean, you hit the nail on the head in the sense that the people side of my job is my most favorite part of the job. And I think that's probably been the biggest challenge of 2020 in the lockdown is that, yes, I love my job and it hasn't, you know, COVID hasn't necessarily affected my job in that sense, because obviously social media has become even more in demand. But I not having that human interaction with people and doing everything on my computer and on Zoom has, you know, made me realise that it really is the people that drive me and their stories and their passions and their vision that I want to help them achieve that. I want to be part of their journey, basically.
Yeah, I've seen you get that from people and cultivate it and lift them up and show them how they can use that positive attitude and just take it forward and make them feel so much more secure. And in some ways, as you say, 2020 social media has become more prevalent, more important, and people have had to embrace it. So to find someone like you to help them embrace that when it wouldn't naturally be their way forward is so important. Having done it yourself, I think is important. Quite often, you know, that you lead from the front, you've experienced these things and therefore you can empathize with people and make sure that they're grounded sufficiently to take the bumps and bashes along the way and still be able to use that, as you said much earlier in the interview, and learn from mistakes and learn from things that you'd like to have done another way. They're not necessarily mistakes, but to learn from it and to have you guide them along the way, I think is absolutely brilliant. I mean, who would you say, I mean, with all the determination and fun and positivity that you've got, who would you say, or what would you say has inspired you the most? What would you say the grounding for your inspiration is?
I think, I'm going to be a bit cheesy here, but my mum and dad, probably. My mum is English, my dad's Moroccan, and they met in the 70s, and my mum moved over to Morocco and lived there for 10 years at a time where, you know, it was the biggest culture shock you could possibly experience. She was brave enough to do that, and then obviously, and I spent the first 2 years of my life in Morocco, and it's the country's been a big part of my upbringing and my identity. And then when they moved over here, my dad's an entrepreneur. He is a journalist. He's been head of the International Press Association for many years. He founded the British Moroccan Society. He's an author. He wrote the Encyclopedia of Africa. So he's a real inspiration. And my mother's just positive. And they both have such a positive attitude. They're amazing. My mother, as you probably know, Hannah, is involved in the Soroptimists, which is an organisation for women. There's a Bromley chapter, and it's all about the education of women and girls. So she very much, her feminist vision and her vision of female empowerment is something that I've definitely grown up with. She also goes out to the UN every year to talk about a certain charity that she represents. So they're both very entrepreneurial and international, and they're just both really inspiring, but they're both really humble as well, so they'd never tell you all of this, by the way.
No. Isn't that wonderful about people? Yeah, I have met your mum, and I actually visited one of their meetings as Soroptimists. In fact, a couple of my friends subsequently, because I was so impressed with them, have joined. So, and I intend to join myself once my mayoralty year is over so that I can actually do something positive, because I know they do lots of work with charities and inspiring young girls. So that's not cheesy at all. I think it's wonderful that they've both inspired you. I would say that my inspiration has also come from the examples I've seen from my parents in many ways. And you can never write off where you get your inspiration from, can you? Some people are from their parents and from their families, and other are from people that they may just have bumped into and met. And I'm sure you inspire people and you drive people forward. Here's a cheesy question, if we're going to do cheesy for a minute. If you were talking to yourself as a teenager, so with all the experience you've got now as a grown-up, if you were talking to yourself as a teenager, what words of wisdom would you give yourself? What advice would you give yourself for the future?
I'd probably just say, relax, don't worry. It will all work out, and enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves when we're younger, and actually, as long as we're working hard and doing our best, that's the main thing. That's the only thing that you should worry about when you're little, is work hard, do your best, and be a good person, be kind. Yeah. Everything else will work out.
It will fall into place, won't it? And there is so much pressure on young people nowadays, especially with all of the exams that they have to do and the tests that they do all the time. And it's really difficult for them, because they're supposed to know where they want to go. They're supposed to have a career plan in their mind, and it's really hard. I agree with you. Definitely be positive, be kind, be proud of yourself, like yourself, and as you did, you know, take opportunities when they arrive and be brave and go for it, and life does work out in the end, even if you haven't got a million O levels and A levels and GCSEs or whatever they're called now. You can still work out in the end, and you still have a happy, successful life and help other people along the way. So, talking about helping other people along the way, I'm now going to ask you for 3 digital marketing / social media top tips for struggling businesses, people that want to push themselves forward, especially if, you know, 2020 has knocked them sideways. What would you suggest? 3 top tips for people.
That's a tough one, but I would definitely say, especially when it comes to social media, quality over quantity. So I think that a lot of people worry about being on every platform and being everywhere. And actually that's not the case. It's just about choosing what platforms are right for you and your business, and doing those platforms well and building up relationships on those platforms, because social media is about relationships. It's not about faceless followers or likes. It's about building relationships. The same principles that we apply, you know, if we work in a shop and we see our customers every day in a shop, or if we go to a networking event like we do with BNI, they also apply on social media. It's about nurturing relationships with real people. So remember that you're speaking to real people. So that would be my tip number one. The second one is be consistent. So I think that people often get analysis paralysis with social media, where they feel that they don't want to say anything unless it's perfect. And actually, it's better to show up and shine than to worry about perfection. So consistently showing up and being authentic is much better than writing the most polished caption, having the best photos. It doesn't matter if it's a selfie and you know, something that you write from the heart, that will actually resonate more with your audience than something that's necessarily, you know, really, really perfect. So definitely be consistent, consistently show up, because it's that consistency that again nurtures those relationships that turn followers into customers and clients.
You've got me on that one, you know, because I think I said to you just before we started this that I'm a bit behind on my Facebook posts, because I haven't felt that they're quite right. I haven't written quite the right words, and I haven't got quite the right this and that. And yeah, I think you've got me on that one. I think I need to, after this, just get on with it and stop worrying about it too much, and just be there and tell people what I've been up to, because that's what I like to do. I like to share with everyone. Yeah. So that was your second one. What's your third one?
Third one would be to know your audience. So imagine that you're talking to one person and really kind of build out that person in your head and speak to their challenges and their needs. So a lot of businesses that, you know, you're a business or an organization because you're there to provide a solution to someone's needs. So focus on those challenges and those needs, and actually that will really help to elevate your voice on social media and attract the right people to your business as well. But just going back to what you said about, you know, that that you also have been worried about what you're saying. But that's just, that's us being human. That's self-doubt. And, you know, as business owners, we are just humans. And it, we do have those days where we worry about what we say, what we look like, what, you know, what other people will think. But actually, in social media, in the world of social media, people are scrolling so fast that most of them aren't giving it a second thought unless it resonates with them. So they won't see the mistakes, but they will see the fantastic content. They will see that authentic voice. The, you know, they will notice when you speak from the heart, but they won't notice that, you know, typo here or, you know, just something that you don't feel like is 100%. Now, that's not saying that I don't want my clients to, you know, have very high standards when it comes to their social media communications, but it is really important to get over some of those mental barriers that hold us back from showing up on social media.
Yeah, I do agree, and I feel told, I will get on with it, because you have helped our mayoralty so much, and I know that I have another session with you, which I'm really looking forward to, just to make sure that we're getting the information out there that I want to be able to communicate with people. And I say to people all the time, this is not all about me. That's, it's not supposed to be a diary, a video diary or a picture diary of me. It's supposed to be about Bromley and the wonderful things that we do in Bromley and how proud we are of all of the amazing people we have out there. So I do need to stop worrying a little and just get on with it. I know, I'm waiting for my next session.
I'm looking forward to it.
No, it'll be brilliant. You are just really good at what you do. I love to listen. It's always, oh, here's a pun. There's always a gem from Jem. That's awful, ooh, isn't it? I'm sorry about that. That just came out there. That's really bad. But so what are your plans for the future then, Jem? What can we do to help you? What are you looking for? And what kind of businesses should sort of get in contact and see what you can do for them?
Well, on a personal level, it's actually been really nice because I've had the realization that I'm not going anywhere. I've moved so much, 5 years here, 5 years there. And actually now I've only been back in the UK for 3 years, but it's nice to think to myself, oh, I'm here to stay, and I can actually start to make plans, like long-term plans, and not always think, but when are we moving back, or what if we do this? So I've just started to look at and make plans for 2021. So one of the areas of my business that I'm 100% expanding on is the courses and workshops that I will be offering. So a long-standing course I offer is my Social Never Sleeps Mastermind Group, which is an online 5-week course for small business owners who basically want to take the guesswork out of what they should be focusing on social media. They will put together a complete social media strategy for their business, and I will give them the knowledge and tools to implement that successfully. And I've been running that for a couple of years now. I just adapted it to an online version during lockdown one, which has been amazing. To be honest, it was something that I was planning to do all along, but the lockdown kind of forced me out of my comfort zone to get something done. Mm-hmm. And I did it, and it's great. So my next course is going to be launching in February. And I just love that because we get such a diversity of different business owners from different industries, and they all chat to each other and learn from each other. So the peer-to-peer interaction and learning is just as important as the information they get from me. So that's an area that I really want to expand. I've done a couple of workshops this autumn. And what's been fantastic about those workshops and the online course is that all of my contacts in America can join because they're online. So I've had a real mix of small business owners on the Zoom calls, on the Zoom workshops. And that's been quite, it's been a proud moment for me, actually. I've really enjoyed it and felt like that, you know, a lot of my different worlds and parts of my life has kind of come together because of this ability to have a global offering because of how empowered we are now with all the tools that we have to come together. You know, the world does seem a smaller place than it used to, which is very, very nice. So for next year, that's 100% I'll be offering on that. I'll be focusing on that. So the workshops and the courses, and then just continuing to work with amazing, inspiring small business owners who really, really just want to grow their business and reach new people.
We have an amazing selection here in Bromley. I know we shouldn't just be talking about Bromley, but obviously, as Mayor of Bromley, I'm very passionate about Bromley. But you know, generally in and around, when you look, we are so lucky. I get the opportunity to meet people in this role that I may not normally meet. And this borough is built on not only volunteers, but also our small businesses and the passion they have in the small things that they do that changes the way that we look at the world and changes the offerings that we have. And I, you know, something I think is really unusual about what you do, Jem, is that you teach people to be self-sufficient. Now, I know so many digital marketing, social media people, PR people that claim to have, and some do, the skills that you have, although, you know, I shouldn't have a favourite, but there we go, it's out there. But you actually teach people and show people and guide people into doing it for themselves. And then they can come back to you, as we're going to with the Mayoralty, and say, okay, we've had a go at this, so how can we improve? And how you're not worried that people are just going to go off and not come back and your business revenue is going to disappear. You seem to build a far stronger relationship with people by helping them to help themselves.
Yeah, I think that the sharing your knowledge is almost the best way to market yourself anyway. And that sharing knowledge and empowering other people, I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. So when I see my clients go off and, you know, post their first video or do their first reel on Instagram or their first, you know, video to camera, you know, talking to camera, and I just think, yes, well done, you did it. And I feel an enormous sense of pride, and I love that side of my work. I love teaching and training and hand-holding as well, because ultimately I do want people to be able to do this for themselves. I mean, social media is obviously a world that's very accessible to everybody, and just being empowering people with the right tools and knowledge is really satisfying for me, and then I can see their business grow for themselves. So yeah, it's kind of a win-win situation.
Yeah, and they do so well. And when people start, as you have done in your life, and as you're talking about other people going to social media, possibly doing piece to camera and things that completely out of their comfort zone, you see them grow as people, you see them grow as individuals. And we've done a lot of that in another business that I work alongside. And I've had to learn to use an auto cue, which was very painful to start with. But you get a little bit better at it and then a little bit more confident. And other people have grown in their piece to cameras and how you get the personality across, not just the idea, the actual person. And people buy from people, don't they? And people trust people.
Absolutely.
And that's why I wanted you to come on, because I know that people will love everything that you do and everything that you stand for. And I couldn't recommend you more highly. But now I'm going to dip away slightly from the businesswoman, although we have had a lot of your own personal gem. We haven't just had businesswoman. But here's a question for you. What would be top on your bucket list?
Oh, that's a tough question. Mm. And I have to think about that. So I love traveling. And obviously 2020 has been a year of no travel. So I think my bucket list is just going through the countries that I haven't visited yet. And in my mind, long term, once the kids are older, I would love to live in two places, like 6 months in the UK and 6 months elsewhere. So for my bucket list is going to be experiences. It's all about experiences, new places, new people, but making sure that I still have my base, my home, which is Bromley now, because that's also, you know, being grounded and feeling like you belong, I think, is really important. I think, but like that theme of belonging, I think that's one thing that I learned a lot about, is that identity and belonging is so important. And when you get that ripped away from you, actually, it does make you work harder.
Yeah.
To get that. And actually, it was only when I moved from the UK to America that I actually realised how important my professional identity was to me. I think I took it for granted before then. You know, I had a job. It was great. I loved it. I travelled. And then it was all taken away. And I was like, oh, I don't feel whole anymore. I had to go through this whole process of self-discovery again. And, you know, I discovered that actually what I do is very much what I am, you know, and it's very integrated into my personality. I do it because I love it. I don't do it because I have to do it. So yeah. I can't remember your original question.
It was bucket question. It was bucket, but you have answered it.
just went off on one there. Sorry.
It's okay. It's that coffee I gave you.
Yeah. Buzzing.
Yeah, no, it was a bucket question. And I agree with you. One of my little dreams is to have somewhere abroad that is ours that I can go to as well as have my grounding here.
Oh, yeah.
So I agree with you on that. I think that would be a wonderful thing to do. I suppose, I mean, we've had a lot of a giggle here today and we have giggled a lot in the past. So I was going to say that what makes you laugh most, but also what makes you relax? Because I know that you do have another skill that you haven't mentioned at all during this interview, which I'm very envious of. But so what makes you laugh? What do you have fun doing?
Right, what makes me laugh? Well, I have a very silly sense of humour, which means that it probably may be interpreted as basic sense of humour, but it's not. I like silliness. I like people who don't take life too seriously and fun and lighthearted. But what do I do to relax? Mm-hmm. I'm really into exercise. I do Pilates religiously every week. And since the age of 16, I've been belly dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. I was going to get it out of you. So, yeah, I mean, I'm envious of that. I'd love to know. I mean, we all think we know what belly dancing is, but it's not what we think it is it? There's far more technique and grace involved in it. And it's a whole, you were showing me once, I think, the whole technique involved. And I thought, I didn't know that was so difficult.
It's one of those beautiful dances that is so accessible to anybody, because any woman with any body type can be a belly dancer. So it's so accessible, but at the same time, it does take practice. It's not something that you just do. Now, obviously, in Morocco and in other Arab countries, girls and boys grow up with the dance. It's like going to a disco, you know, when we used to go to a disco and we'd dance, or we'd dance with our parents at home. You know, they grow up with the movements, they grow up with the music. I grew up with the music because my father was always playing Arabic pop and various different types of Arabic music. So I've always absolutely loved Arab music. So that's where it started for me. And then when I was 16 years old, I saw a woman in Marrakesh dance and just sort of like was mesmerized by her. And I just looked at my mum and I just went, I want to learn how to do that. And so I got some lessons, and obviously friends and family in Morocco, you know, were very enthusiastic to show me as well what to do. But it's one of those dances that has also evolved quite a lot. It's not a static industry. It's not, you know, the belly dance community and dance culture in Egypt, and Egypt really is like the Hollywood of belly dance. That's evolved over the years as well. So even when I started to learn it many moons ago, when I was 16 years old, to how people teach it now and what's popular, and the, you know, the music scene now is, you know, it's quite different. There's so many different facets to it. It's like saying, what's Western dancing like? Well, you'd be like, well, what do you mean what's Western dancing like? There's ballet, and then there's hip hop, and then there's this, and then there's, you know, we've got rock, and we've got pop, and we've got pop rock, and that's exactly the same for belly dancing. It's that multifaceted. So
gosh, I didn't realize
you
that.
Can never be like an expert, but there are a lot of dance teachers. I found an amazing dance teacher here in the UK, a lady called Chloe Kenny, who's actually from Southeast London, but has relocated down to Hastings. And she, I discovered her when I moved back to the UK, because she was teaching classes in Forest Hill, which was amazing, and joined her community. And she just nurtured this amazing community of women who all support each other. And I think this is what is so amazing about the belly dance world, is that it is about empowering women and supporting women of all ages, backgrounds, body sizes, to love their bodies and move their bodies. It's all about body positivity. Everyone can do it. Everyone can take part. I did teach belly dancing before I moved to America. I taught it in London for a number of years.
I think we need to get you starting again. Ooh. I think people listening to this will want to have a go. Yeah, but
I love being a student though. I love being a student because there is so much to learn, and I do want to get back to Egypt and learn from some of the master teachers out there. I'd love to get back there as soon as possible, really, to do. There's many dance festivals and workshops that take place. So, yes.
Well, I was going to ask you another question. Well, I will ask you another question, but before I ask you that, it's like, well, can I come with you? Because that would be great, because yes. I'd love to learn how to do it. But no, the last light question, because I know that we've talked about work a lot, is it's a semi-serious one. So if you were going to have a dinner party, who would you put round your table? I mean, from people alive now, people that are alive in the past, even sort of futuristic kind of idea, avatars or whatever. But who would you have around your dinner table? You have a dinner table of maybe 6 to 8 people. Who would you invite?
That's a really hard question. Because part of me just everyone that I love. But if I was to think about like, who would I love to sit down and have coffee with? I would definitely invite Michelle Obama.
Oh yeah.
Because she's amazing. And I love, I don't know if you've read her book Becoming, which I think I read last Christmas, actually. I think it was my Christmas book last year. Or it might have been the year before, but, obviously the Chicago connection, you know, she was born and brought up in Chicago, and in the book, she explains so much about, how that shaped her, but just how, you know, determined and intelligent and amazing she is, and how she's empowered so many other women, both in locally and in the US and across the world. So definitely Michelle Obama would be at my dinner, you know, if she would want to come, then she is invited.
Of course she would.
Yeah.
I think it's a great choice. Yes. Yeah. Who else have you got?
I haven't even thought about who else. That's the only one that kind of came to mind.
Yeah, she is an amazing woman.
I'd have to think about that, I'm afraid. I'd have to give that a little bit more thought.
We can always talk about that next time, because
I really hope
you come back and we can do a follow-on podcast, because I'm sure people will be asking questions. And we'll have all your details on the podcast page so that they can get hold of you and ask you questions. And they may be asking to come for dinner, I don't know. But no, I'm sure they'll be asking you proper, serious marketing, digital marketing questions.
They can ask me both.
Oh, that's great. No, but I've really enjoyed today. Thank you so much for joining me, Jem. And I knew quite a lot about you, but I know even more now. And I'm sure people will be inspired by your experiences, the wealth of knowledge that you have, the ability you have to be able to encourage people to be the best of themselves and do the best that they can. And you'll be there to help them along their way and get maybe some businesses that are listening out of the doldrums and a great start to 2021. Because as I said earlier, I couldn't recommend you more highly as a lovely woman, a businesswoman, and a very successful businesswoman at that. So thank you so much for joining
me
today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. I feel like I've just sat down and had a chat with a friend. So thank you. And I know that I always call you Hannah because we've know each other. Before that you took up the position as mayor, but that your official title is Lady Mayor,
Madam Mayor.
Madam Mayor, sorry.
I know,
Madam Mayor.
Seems so crazy since we've known each other before.
I know. But yeah, I love everything that you're doing, and everyone I know that has met you just raves about the new mayor and how dynamic you are and personable. So thank you for everything that you've been doing. And yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show. This has been great. It's been a great opportunity.
It's been a lovely chat. Thank you so much, Jem. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining me today. If you know someone or are someone who should join me, please get in touch. Meanwhile, believe in yourself, support others, and please stay safe.